From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. When we asked on our Facebook page, what does it mean to be a woman, we got an earful. This was from Kelly. This is sort of a silly question, as if it could be defined and categorized so easily. I can tell you what it means for me, one particular woman. I have no ability to speak for the rest of the gender. Angela wrote, I know, let's help KUOW the conversation, put us in our neat box. And Bogdana wrote, only a man can ask such a question. So, does it make sense to ask the question, what does it mean to be a woman? I'm at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. Is there any part of that question that we can meaningfully discuss and answer? It's 800-289-5869. Or is it just impossible to say something meaningful about what being a woman is? Is it whatever you want it to be or can make it? Women's roles in society have certainly changed a lot in the last half century. Their participation in the workforce has almost tripled. Women run companies and countries, but women still only make 77 cents on the dollar for every man. And culture still defines a lot of qualities and jobs and roles as feminine. So what does that mean? What should it mean? And how has it changed over the years? Incidentally, tomorrow we're going to be asking, what does it mean to be a man? But today we're focusing on this former question. Amanda Swar is an associate professor of gender, women, and sexuality studies at the University of Washington here in Seattle. Amanda, thanks for coming to the studio today.
Thanks for having me.
So these questions from our Facebook listeners, I thought were actually, readers were actually pretty cogent. I'd like to start with one of them. Is it a silly question to ask, what does it mean to be a woman?
Well, I think that it's a question that we think about a lot, that we're all defining all the time what it means for each of us to be a woman, to be a man, maybe to be outside of gender. And so I think that it's a silly question on one hand, but it's one that we're constantly grappling with on the other hand.
Does trying to answer the question put women in a box?
I think that we get the box in some senses from all sorts of locations in our lives. We get it from the media, we get it from advertising, we get it from the ways that gender's policed by our parents, by our peers. And so I think there are lots of boxes and we're trying to work within them, but there are lots of constraints that we're dealing with as well.
And is the question, what does it mean to be a woman, something only a man could ask?
Well, I think we're all asking it. I've taught a class for a long time that's called Real Women, and the real is in quotes, because I think that we all fall outside the expectations of gender in lots of different ways.
What can we learn from asking the question, what does it mean to be a woman, and what things do we just have to acknowledge from the outset will never be answered by asking that question and trying to answer it?
Well, I think we can think about what kinds of stereotypes exist about what it means to be a woman. I think we can think about how the ideas of what it means to be a woman have changed historically and how they differ in different cultures, and that can help us get at what it means individually as well as societally.
One fundamental thing we can say about women is that they can have children and men cannot have children. And of course, that's been used in a lot of different ways to define what it means to be a woman. How should that aspect of womanhood play into answering the question of what is it to be a woman?
Well, no one can have a child without sperm. And I think there's also some question about whether fertility should define what it means to be a successful woman. Women who are older, women who are not able to conceive or choose not to conceive, have also struggled with, you know, if they fit expectations of what it is to be a woman. So that's, I think, an ongoing debate.
What would be the most basic definition of a woman?
Well, I like to think about the distinction between sex and gender. I think that that's pretty useful. Sex being the body, hormones, chromosomes, genitals, and gender being chosen different kinds of ways that we think about clothes, demeanor, behaviors. I think that there's been a real shift within the past 50 years, let's say, into recognizing the ways that gender is really not something that's biological. It's not something that's given, but it's something that's socially constructed.
Could you explain that a little bit more and maybe give an example?
Sure. I think that we can think about, for example, I like the example of pink versus blue, right? We often associate pink clothes with a baby girl and blue clothes with a baby boy. But before World War I, those colors were actually switched. Pink was considered at that time a strong and decided and virile color. and blue was considered to be delicate and dainty.
I did not know that. So there are no color photographs from back then, but if we had seen color photographs, we might have seen a lot of pink on men.
Yes, before World War I, there were, well, actually even before that, white babies were considered ungendered and gender neutral. And then around that time, related specifically to marketing and consumer goods of clothes and different kinds of products for children, the colors came into play. There were other kind of societal factors. There was a popularity of two paintings called Pinky and Blue Boy that kind of took on this huge significance, and the colors shifted over time. So I think it's interesting to think about that now when we have so much attachment to what gender is, what gender colors are, what gender behaviors are, and to just think about how none of those things are really set in stone.
Well, the marketplace certainly has many ways to tell us how to be men, how to be women. And what kind of role do you think that has had in influencing our views on what it means?
I think it's had a huge role that the way that products are marketed, at the advertising that we see, models that we see, I think that really defines a lot of our expectations around what it means to be gendered in particular kinds of ways. We spend a lot of time in courses thinking about advertisements and the ways that people are represented. And there's no there's shifts over time, but there's still a distinction between femininity and masculinity, with masculinity being kind of stronger, being superior, and femininity being consistently inferior.
I want to get back to that point. But the idea of how advertising and marketing influences our views of what it means to be a man or a woman, doesn't it also prove to be a countervailing force that people look at that advertising and very definitely don't want to be that definition of a woman?
I think sometimes that's true, but I don't think that we're able to completely subvert that. I mean, I think there can be a process of unlearning what we see in advertising, but we're constantly bombarded with it. So it's kind of an uphill battle.
And is the framing of masculinity in a more positive light than femininity just reflected in the real world of women being paid less and being less well represented in government in most places? How do you see that playing out?
I think it's definitely it's an ongoing kind of binary, right? So that femininity is conceptualized as the opposite of masculinity. These aren't just separate categories that we consider in a vacuum or consider, independently. And so I think it's interesting to think about the ways that femininity has been kind of denigrated while masculinity has been embraced. If you just look at, say, for example, shifting clothing styles, androgynous clothing styles have been what we call androgynous is really an embracing of masculinity by women, right? That we see women wearing pants, that we see women wearing so-called boyfriend jeans or different kinds of clothes like that. But we don't see men taking on wearing tutus, for example, right? Or embracing femininity in the same ways without being experiencing some kind of disdain.
Mm-hmm. Unless they try to turn it around and say, see how secure I am? I can wear a tutu.
Right. And even then, it's see how secure I am in my masculinity, right, even though I'm wearing a tutu.
Right. Good point. I'm talking to Amanda Swar, an associate professor of gender, women, and sexuality studies at the University of Washington. And the topic today is, what does it mean to be a woman? We're talking about how we can kind of get to that question, what that question means or doesn't mean. Keir wrote to us, being a woman means struggle and triumph over the right to simply exist. What do you think about Keir's definition?
I think there's definitely some struggle, and I think that there's ways that it's an uphill battle. So I can appreciate what Kira's saying.
And Jamie wrote to us that being a woman means whatever I want it to mean. And as I read that, I thought that might be true for women in certain places and probably not in other places. What do you think?
I kind of don't think that that's true for any of us. Myself, I guess I just see choice as a lot more complicated than that, that we can't just make simple decisions about I'd like to wear, this color today without remembering in some internal level all of the messages that we've always gotten about what pink might mean, for example, or what a skirt means, what our parents told us when we were young about what skirts are too short or, what kinds of appropriate expectations there are around gender.
We're talking today about what does it mean to be a woman. We're at 206-543-5869, 206-543-KUOW, 800-289-5869. And maybe what it meant to be a woman to you 20 years ago is different from what it means to be a woman for you in 2013. 206-543-KUOW or 800-289-5869. Or if you'd like to put your thoughts in writing, write to us, conversation@kuow.org. Women have more opportunity than they did 50 years ago, even 10 years ago. Has that changed the way that women are defined in our society, their increase in power?
I think that there are definitely more kinds of opportunities, although those are really still shaped significantly by race and class. I'd say even when different kinds of opportunities are opened up, they're still shaped by gender inequalities. An example might be women in sport. For example, since the introduction of Title IX legislation that allowed girls to participate in sports, there's been a lot more opportunities for sports. But these sports are still decidedly gendered. And there's still a way that women athletes, for example, are represented in Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue or, you know, in pink athletic clothing, wearing skirts, where there's still an emphasis on femininity, even when women are taking on more strong and athletic roles.
I wouldn't disagree with your overall point, but I got to say, when I saw the adolescent daughter of some friends of mine playing basketball, I hadn't been to a women's basketball game ever, and seeing these young women playing basketball, they were banging the boards, they were going for the hoop, they were playing a really strong game. It kind of changed my image of what women did athletically, and of course, we see that with professional women's sports too.
It's exciting. I mean, I think there are opportunities to kind of challenge what it means to be a woman and to challenge some of those long-held assumptions of what that might mean. I wish that there were the same opportunities about men expressing femininity, because we just really haven't found that as analogous.
How does this question change or remain the same about what it means to be a woman when we're talking about lesbians?
I think sexuality and gender are really closely intertwined, that lots of the, say, accusations of women being lesbians are often really couched in gender, that women look too mannish, that their hair are too short, the hair might be too short. And so I think there's a really close relationship between gender and sexuality that can't be separated, that what it means to be a successful woman is still also about heterosexuality, about being attracted to a man. And there have been attempts to kind of reclaim femness or to reclaim femininity, but I think we're still within that space where sexuality is so closely linked to gender.
And how about transgendered people? The Orange is the New Black series that's on Netflix right now features a character, I believe it's the first transgendered man to woman featured in a major Hollywood production, Hollywood-style production. How does that change this question, or does it change it at all?
I haven't seen the Orange is the New Black,
right,
but I understand that trans women have really challenged ideas about what it means to be a woman in important ways. I think part of the challenge, Julia Serrano is an author who really suggests the ways that in her experience that embracing femininity has really been something that's caused her to lose status in society, that because masculinity is so valued over femininity, that trans women who are embracing femininity experience violence, experience confusion in a very specific kind of way.
When you talk to your students about some of these issues, about what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a man, what are some of the things that surprises them when you talk to them about this?
I'd say one thing that really surprises them often is the way that we expect that male bodies and female bodies are really distinct and clear. An author, a feminist scientist, Anne Fausto Sterling, suggests that one in 100 of us are intersexed in some ways, which basically means that in terms of genitals or hormones or chromosomes, in some ways that there's a lot more middle ground between what it means to be male or what it means to be female. And I think students are always surprised but excited about the possibility that gender distinctions are not as strong as we've been led to believe, including around bodies.
Is it your sense that it is a continuum? There are certainly women who might exhibit male characteristics, men who exhibit what are classically female characteristics. And there's the theory that it's all a continuum and we're all somewhere along that continuum. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely. Yeah, I do think there's a much stronger continuum than we've been led to believe, or even that we're kind of pushed into by advertising, too, right, where there's an expectation. Here we are, men or women on different sides. So I think thinking about the continuum can actually help us to open up some possibilities.
It seems to solve one question because it settles the either you're this or you're that part of it. But then the question becomes more sophisticated. How much on this side are you or how much on that side are you?
Right, right. Or what would it mean to be without a gender binary altogether? I think that's something that my students actually push me on that I think is really exciting. Like, what does it mean to not use gendered language or to use pronouns to describe yourself? How would that, or what does it mean to kind of make different decisions about what kinds of clothes you would wear? How does that give us different space to express our own individuality?
You know, before we decided to talk about what does it mean to be a woman, we actually had talked about tomorrow's program, what does it mean to be a man? And as I was thinking about it, I think I don't get up every morning thinking, what am I going to do to be a man today? Masculinity doesn't mean anything to me. And then I had a flash on Stephen Colbert when on the show he says, race doesn't mean anything to me. And of course, the joke is that it's underlying all the things that he's saying and thinking. He just doesn't think that it's there. I mean, is there this kind of unconscious aspect of this that even if we overtly say it doesn't make any sense to ask this question, it's still being asked internally and in our relationships every day?
Absolutely, Ross. I think that's a great example. And I think the invisibility of gender, like the invisibility of race, is something that we have to work to become conscious of in some ways. I know for me, I grew up very feminine. I had long hair. I wore a lot of makeup. And all of a sudden, I started to think when I actually discovered feminism, I thought, why am I doing all these things? Like, what are my reasons for them? And unlearning those or trying to be at least more self-conscious about them was a process because it was so kind of subconscious for me and invisible.
So you got it figured out now, Amanda?
Not at all.
What it means to be a woman for you?
The more I think about what it means to be a woman, the less I know.
All right. I think that's a good way to end this because it is an endlessly interesting and endlessly complex question. Amanda Swar, Associate Professor of Gender, Women, and Sexuality Studies at the University of Washington. Thanks for stopping over.
Thank you so much.
David Hyde produces The Conversation with Arwin Nix. We're getting production help from Allie Ferguson this week. Bernard Ouellette is our engineer from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm Ross Reynolds.